Non-stop talk radio, streaming 24 hours a day. TalkZone.com. TalkZone.com. Now, TalkZone presents The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, Insights and Solutions to Some of America's Most Troubling Societal Problems, featuring community activist Robert L. Woodson Sr., who has spent decades promoting solutions to some of the most challenging problems facing our nation today. Now, here's your host, Bob Woodson.
Welcome, everyone. This is Bob Woodson. We're pleased that you are joining us today for the 10th program in our new series, The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why. Today, we will be focusing on the financial crisis that is affecting so many low-income and middle-income Americans. As we do so with this show, we'll be looking at solutions. Our three guests today are Loretta Abrams, Senior Vice President of Community Engagement for HSBC North America. In that position, Ms. Abrams is responsible for policy issues, community outreach, and the company's broad range of financial educational rescue loan and home ownership preservation programs, as well as the bank's Community Reinvestment Act responsibility. Later, we'll be joined by Charles Perry, who's the director of the Center for Neighborhood Enterprises Adult Financial Literacy Program, which has provided financial literacy education to more than 22,000 low- and middle-income adults since 2006 in partnership with HSBC. We'll be welcoming Charles. The third guest will be Antoine Diggs, Executive Director of the Buffalo Weed and Seed Program, which has partnered with CNE and HSBC in providing financial literacy education to residents of Buffalo, New York community, as well as to inmates in correctional facilities there. He has an interesting story to tell you about his own experience in getting off of his finances in order. Welcome, Ms. Abrams. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great today, Bob.
Good. I when I think of HSBC, I know they brought out a company, Household Finance. And I remember, I'm giving my age away now, back in 1958, when I'd gotten out of the military, and I went to an a Household Finance office, had to take my mother at the time, so she had to co-sign a loan for $500 I could buy a beautiful 1949 Mercury.
Glad to help you out, Bob.
That was my first experience with financial institutions. But tell us a little about HSBC and what are your responsibilities there?
Okay. Well, I'm proud to say HSBC is one of the largest financial services organizations in the world. We have a global presence operating in over 86 countries and territories. And within the U.S., we're one of the top 10 banks. And in fact, a little known fact is the fact that we've had a presence in the United States since 1866 when we opened our first bank branch in the state of California.
Wow. And given the current financial crisis and home foreclosures and whatnot, why does HSBC care about serving low-income consumers? And what is the desired outcome for this? Tell us something about why do you think like some of these people got into the mess that they're in?
Okay. I'm happy to. That's a big question, and there's a lot to say around the issue. But I can say that HSBC has had a strong commitment to education, financial education specifically, for a very, very long time. And we are sort of veterans in this field, and we're happy to have a long history and a good record of success when it's most needed now by a lot of people. Education is one of our three primary giving imperatives, and so around the globe, our commitment has been to educating consumers, and then we take that education to a very specific level, and it's sort of reflected in our corporate logo, which is the world's local bank. So while we have a presence globally, where we are in a community, we like to work closely and directly with the members of that community, understanding where what the needs are and hopefully having programs and products and education and training that will fit the needs of those constituents. We've educated consumers in one way or another for more than 75 years, and our goal when we're working within each community is to make sure that we are engaging and partnering in a collaborative way with community-based organizations who are on the ground, who are credible, who are a trusted resource, and who can help identify for us what the needs are in a particular community.
And one of those communities, I was amazed at looking at some statistics about in the Black community, over 50% of Black Americans are unbanked. Tell me and tell our listeners what that means to be unbanked, and why is that not helpful to people?
It's an important problem right now, and one that needs all of our attention. And the statistic was made available in a study released last week by the FDIC, and about 54% of African Americans were unbanked and or underbanked. It means it's a very expensive proposition for people who can least afford it, because all of the alternative and non-mainstream financial sources that are being used are more expensive generally than mainstream banking services. So, money that's spent to cash a check, for example, wouldn't be an expense if you have a banking relationship, et cetera, and so on. And so it just strikes us as something that needs all of our collective attention, because it's a situation where the people who don't have the money are paying more money to manage their money.
In other words, I was appalled that when I would drive through some low-income minority communities, the local convenience store seemed to be the bank. Western Union, payday loans, and signs for renting furniture, renting television sets, and all of these. What does it mean for low-income households to spend their money at these kinds of services that are in their communities?
Well, first of all, and I said previously, the services are generally very expensive. So it's an expensive way to manage your money. Also, the fact that you're not saving and you're not sort of starting on the path to financial capability, because I know the interest rates are very low today, but compounding is compounding, and it's better than no interest. And so if you're able to save money and you're saving it in a bank, you do have the benefit of earning interest on your savings, and then having a banking relationship helps you and helps all of us for when we need to borrow money or need to look to a bank for a mortgage or an auto loan or some bigger purchases as we go forward in life. And the sooner we start and establish and maintain a healthy banking relationship, the better it is all around. It's a stabilizing situation for the individual and for communities, et cetera.
Certainly, what do you look for when you talk about an operating partner that's on the ground? What are some of the qualities that you're looking for? And I know that you're in relationship with the centers, but what do you look for?
Well, we have a robust selection process, and we're looking for grassroots organizations who are on the ground and connected within the communities, that are credible, trusted leaders that have a commitment to educating and a commitment to the community and understand what those needs are, have also the ability to reach the constituency, can measure their impact and track the results that they're able to achieve within the communities. So wrap that all up, and we're looking for a strong track record.
Track record, and I guess people who are connected, and I guess some innovative ways that you're connected. What are your community reinvestment? Tell me what that means because you're responsible. Part of your portfolio is community reinvestment.
Right. Well, the Community Reinvestment Act is a 30-year-old law that basically establishes guidelines for all banks operating in the United States that establish guidelines for how banks must lend and invest and provide services in the communities commensurate to deposits that are given from that community. And it applies to again, all banks, and each bank sort of establishes an assessment area, and you have a set of target goals for the good work that you want to do in the community, which is within your assessment area. And the best way to do that is to partner with community-based organizations and to really understand what the needs are in those communities.
All of us are concerned about the high foreclosure rates. Without getting into all of the various reasons that people have gotten into this situation, but certainly lack of knowledge in taking out a mortgage in the first place is one. And to what extent is your financial literacy efforts directed at people who own homes or to prevent them from losing their homes?
Well, we have thanks, Bob. That's a great question. We have two specific programs within our financial education curriculum. One is sort of a home buying curriculum, which helps to prepare individuals who are going to be buying a home for the first time, so they sort of understand the process and understand what to expect when they become a homeowner, or the steps you have to take to become a homeowner. And that's called our home ownership curriculum. The second curriculum is called Managing Your Mortgage, and it's more of a specific curriculum that talks about, first off, what the cost of homeownership is, so that people are ready and have an appreciation for the fact that there'll be expenses beyond the mortgage payment when you're owning a home. And then the second half of that program speaks specifically to the issues that we have today. It gives people an idea of what to do when and if trouble happens. If they run into difficulty paying their mortgages or their financial circumstances change, it walks through the process of what the next steps and what the best things would be for them to do. And we encourage people always to call your lender or your mortgage servicer at the first sign of any trouble, and talk through what the issues might be, so that we can work together to hopefully come up with a solution. And if talking to the mortgage lender or servicer is not an option, or they prefer a third party resource, there are many organizations, HUD certified counseling agencies available today, who will work with borrowers on a one-on-one basis without any charge for their services. And so we strongly encourage that, because there's still a very, very high percentage of borrowers who go to foreclosure without having spoken to their lender or anybody else about their situation.
One of the myths I want you to comment on, one of the great myths that circulates in communities is that, well, these lending institutions really give this money and are anxious to foreclose on these properties so they can take them back and make a profit on their resale. And that's one of the biggest myths floating around, and I wish you would address that. It seems to me, from what I know, the last thing that a lender wants is to foreclose on a property, because the property is vacant often, and it's vandalized, loses value, sometimes damaged. You know, it's but it is one of these myths that has been floating around out there. Would you comment on that?
Sure, and that's a very good point. And I'll just say, no, nobody wins in a foreclosure situation, and everybody, it's in everyone's best interest to avoid that foreclosure situation. And the government has recently, the Treasury Department, had lots and lots of statistics out, and the Mortgage Bankers Association about, you know, the average loss when a home goes to foreclosure, but it's not a money making proposition for anybody. And you're right, it has a devastating impact on the consumer and the family first and foremost. And it has a devastating impact on communities and neighborhoods and the local municipalities when foreclosures happen, when homes are vacant and unoccupied. And so nobody wants that as a solution, and that's not an option or a business plan for anybody. And it's important that people know that there are programs out there to help people, and there are lots of different ways you can get help. Not every lender has the same solutions available, but usually there is a solution available or some support available in talking through to your lender early on about the situation.
I had a very interesting experience early in my career in this area in the city of Detroit, where there were 50 homes vacant and abandoned in this community, and they were purchased by a local church. They gave the police permission to go in and eject the drug dealers who had been using these, because they would flee in there because they were private properties and they couldn't go on. Mm-hmm. And what this very enterprising minister did was take over these properties and use some of their own resources and spend $40,000 fixing them up. But they were also screening their own members of their congregation, providing financial literacy to them, but also compelling them to take home ownership classes and to improve their credit score. And then once they were qualified, they were then given an opportunity to purchase these houses. And since the construction was done by members of the community, they were protected during construction. But they ran into the problem of getting them insured for their replacement value. And banks would loan until they went to the Detroit National Bank, who understood that they weren't redlining. What it is that the banks had a difficult time making character judgments in certain situations. But since the pastor had satisfied this need, the bank was able to buy the mortgages and package. And then the pastor was able to sell these homes and go on to another parcel. But there seems to be an example of when a lending institution partners with a local grassroots organization that works to improve the behavior of low-income people, do you have a win-win situation? And I take it that's the kind of situation that HSBC is attempting to do around the country.
Right. And you know, that's an example of a very creative and innovative program. And, you know, as the world's local bank, we want to be active in the communities in just those types of ways to understand a specific need in a specific area and to figure out if there's a way that we can help with a product or a service. The important thing is, first-time homebuyer programs are something that that we have in certain of our markets, and it's something that's strongly encouraged because people sort of go through a process, a lengthy process of understanding the whole concept and the whole protocol of becoming a homeowner while they're improving their credit score if it's needed, and while they're saving the down payment if it's necessary. Many of the programs today have a matching component, so there's again a lot to be gained in terms of just knowledge, but certainly grant funds that are available to individuals who go through a specific home buyer program. So we certainly would encourage that and encourage any consumer who's considering becoming a first-time home buyer is to take that purchase opportunity very seriously and to make sure that they're feeling capable and comfortable with the important decisions that they'll have to make. These are the most important decisions most of us will ever make, and this is the biggest financial decision that most of us will ever make in our life.
What are some of the innovative ways that you've seen in your experience that financial literacy has been conducted with HSBC's partners? What are some of the experiences that you've had?
Well, we like to think that we have a lot of different arrows that we can put in our quiver, because the important thing is that not everybody learns information in the same way and needs the same information at the same time. So we try to have a broad range of programs and content and material so that it's accessible to people when they need it and in the form they'd like to they'd like to receive it, so that they are so we have our website, and we have a Learn Online component within our website. We have a workshop curriculum for people who want to be trained and who want to attend a workshop. And we have a series of booklets that can be downloaded from our website. We have a number of different calculators and programs on our website if people want to to work with some sort of technical aids on sort of getting their financial plan together. And so, you know, we feel like the important thing is to have a plan, you know, and for your finances, whatever that plan might be, to start somewhere. And there are a couple of things that we're encouraging everybody to do. The first thing is to become banked if you're not banked, and so to pursue that with some vigor, because there's a high cost of not being banked, and to start saving as soon as possible, save as soon as you can and as much as you can, and even a little bit helps. To understand what your credit report is, to take a look at it, to see what's on that credit report, look for any errors and get those errors corrected right away. And then to know your credit score, to know what it is, to know where you want it to be, and start taking steps to fix it and strengthen it if it's broken. And then paying down debt. Look for ways to sort of reduce your debt obligation. Seek help if you need it. And when you have when you have an opportunity to talk to your lender, take that opportunity. If you're having trouble, talk to the lender or some other trusted third party resource if you need it. And don't despair. Start taking action, put one step ahead of the other, and talk to people, take advantage of all of the resources out there. I've talked a lot about yourmoneycounts.com, which is HSBC's financial education website, but there are many, many websites. The government's website is mymoney.gov. It's a very, very good website, and there's lots of other websites that are available for people and will answer just about any question you might have about any aspect of your financial career.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We've been talking about financial crisis in low-income communities with Mrs. Lorella Abrams, Senior Vice President of HSBC Bank. I'm Bob Woodson, President of Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, and we will return after these messages.